directly break the ceasefire deal in Gaza?
No, I what we also need to remember is that even before October 7th, Israeli officials and politicians, as well as military commanders, were calling for a large-scale invasion of the West Bank. This has been a procedure that has been placed in effect long before October 7th. It has also, we do know that this operation was planned in tandem with the ceasefire negotiations. So we know it is pre-planned, but it's also important to recognize that the ultimate goal of Israeli colonial practice is to push Palestinians out. So it doesn't necessarily have to be an obstruction to the ceasefire, but it does act and align with Israel's overall goal.
Mariam Barghouti, we want to thank you for being with us. Palestinian writer and journalist based in Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. We'll link to your new article at Drop Site News. Israel invades Jenin days after signing Gaza ceasefire. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warren, Afterina Nadira, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Stelly, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Ozbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Torrieri, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. To sign up for our daily digest, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a Pacific Northwest judge strikes down Trump's attempt to overturn birthright citizenship. A daughter of undocumented immigrants tells her story of living in the Northwest, and a congresswoman pushes for more protections for immigrants. And what's the plan for houselessness in Portland? New details about that. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 23rd, 2025. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks for joining us. Washington State-based federal judge John Kuhnauer has blocked President Trump's birthright citizenship executive order from taking effect, citing the 14th Amendment. Today, the judge heard a request from four Democratic-led states and granted a temporary restraining order against Trump's order to limit birthright citizenship, which has long been guaranteed by the 14th Amendment, to people who have at least one parent who is a United States citizen or permanent resident. The judge, nominated to the bench by Republican President Ronald Reagan in 1981, said, quote, "This is a blatantly unconstitutional order." Washington Attorney General Nick Brown says this is a win, and he'll keep fighting for what he calls Washingtonians' freedoms.
We are thrilled that the court saw the seriousness and the urgency of the complaints and request for a temporary restraining order brought by the state of Washington, Oregon, Arizona, and Illinois, and are thrilled that the judge issued a temporary restraining order directing the United States government to take no further action in enforcing and implementing the unconstitutional and un-American executive order attempting to eliminate birthright citizenship in America.
Also today, a newly elected Washington State congresswoman joined the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Here's Emily Randall speaking out against Trump's actions to deport immigrants.
I am proud to stand united with my colleagues in the Congressional Hispanic Caucus in support of Dreamers, in support of farm workers, in support of families. And I'm proud to stand in support of our communities with the people of Washington. In Washington State, where I was a legislator for the last 6 years, we know that immigrants make our communities stronger. That's why we've expanded our state financial aid programs to Dreamers and immigrants, because we know we cannot reach our workforce goals, our education goals, our economic goals without ensuring that everyone has access to education and opportunity. We know that we're facing a healthcare crisis, and without ensuring that our immigrant communities are safe and that Dreamers are being educated to become nurses and doctors, we will not be able to take care of our aging community, of our sick, of our vulnerable. We know that we have a housing crisis in Washington State, just like across the country. And without ensuring that our immigrant communities are safe, we will not be able to build the housing that we need. And just like everyone in Washington, immigrant families are struggling to afford rent. They are struggling to afford the chance to buy their first homes. And we need to ensure that we are building an economy that is thriving for all of us, from the middle out. I'm proud to be here standing alongside my colleagues against these dangerous attacks on our immigrant communities, on our neighbors, on our friends, on our fellow churchgoers, on our classmates in school, on our teachers, because a frightened community does not make our community safer. I've heard stories as I've talked to immigrant activists in our communities of folks who are scared to go to their jobs at fish processing plants in Grays Harbor. They are scared to go to their jobs in the timber industry on the Olympic Peninsula. And they're concerned that there are rumors that ICE is seen at our Kingston Ferry terminals. Folks are living in fear, and it is only forcing neighbors to live closed off, to not communicate with each other, to not feel safe to call law enforcement if they're facing abuse or if there's a crime on their street. We stand here united to ensure that everyone in our community is safe. Everyone in our community can trust that the government is looking out for them. Everyone in our community has the access to the tools that they need to build the lives that they dream of. I'm proud to be here with my colleagues, and I'm grateful to all of you for being here with us as well.
And that's Washington Congresswoman Emily Randall. She also answered a question about how Washington State is gearing up to protect immigrants.
Our school board members, our Washington State school superintendent have all been engaged in conversation with our governor and attorney general and advocates. And I've been engaging in some of those conversations, too. You know, every state is different, you know, for what protective opportunities that they have. But I think it's important that we ensure that we are working closely with our colleagues at the state level and at the local level to center families, to make sure our communities are strong, to center farm workers, to center an economy that is thriving, to ensure that dreamers are safe in the classroom. And someone earlier mentioned the chronic absenteeism. You know, that's a conversation, a bipartisan conversation that we've been having, you know, since COVID. How do we bounce back from chronic absenteeism and, you know, challenges in our schools? And this is only exacerbating that problem. This is only making students feel less safe in their classrooms and families less safe sending their kids to school. In 2017 and 2018, we in fact saw an effort, a grassroots effort of neighbors, non-immigrant neighbors, who would drive their big trucks to some families' homes to escort them to school because they were worried about what might happen on the way. And now that schools are no longer safe, folks are even more concerned. So we are having some of those conversations, but have to continue.
And Monica Mendoza-Cathone also had some powerful words about what it's like to be the child of illegal immigrants in this country. She was born in Washington State and spoke about the attorneys general fighting Trump's order banning birthright citizenship.
I'm standing here proudly, a first-generation American born in South King County to two formerly undocumented farm workers who migrated from Michoacán, Mexico. My parents came here with the promise of an American dream, the promise of freedom, of democracy. Largely thanks to their sacrifices, I was able to become a first-generation college graduate and now a first-generation law school graduate set to take the bar exam later this year. Unfortunately, we are in a dark time in our national government where the dreams of my parents are threatened to be taken away for so many people in the future. Trump announced with an executive order that he would attempt to take away birthright citizenship, among a series of other orders. I understand that many may feel frightened, scared, worried. Perhaps you may be in my situation. You recently became a citizen, an expecting parent. Please know that here in Washington, our leaders will do everything they can to ensure that every immigrant is safe, that attempted orders like these are simply attempts. For even if our national leaders will try to do away with what is legal, have solace in the fact that our attorney general will ensure that Washington remains safe for immigrants, that the law will be upheld, Constitution, the 14th Amendment, and he will fight to keep the promise of liberty, truth, and justice for all enshrined. I thank Attorney General Brown and all in his office for their work to uphold this promise.
Meantime, there are signs that hate crimes are increasing along the West Coast. Suzanne Potter has more on that story.
State data show that hate crime reports almost doubled between 2019 and 2023, so the Civil Rights Division is promoting its new CA versus Hate hotline. Since its launch in May 2023, the hotline has received more than 1,000 reports of hate incidents, but almost none from rural counties such as Del Norte, Sutter, and Mariposa. Kevin Kish directs the California Civil Rights Department and says the state is partnering with community groups to increase trust.
We know that when people are afraid, when they feel isolated, it is unlikely for them to turn to government, at least not without a trusted intermediary who helps them do that.
Kish says people who fail to report hate incidents may worry they won't be taken seriously. They may have a language barrier or fear contacting the authorities. The hotline number is 8338-NO-HATE. It is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., or you can report on the website, caversushate.org. Gaonu Vong is with the grassroots organization Hmong Innovating Politics. She says the Trump administration's focus on mass deportation worries many in the Hmong community.
And this continues to really deeply affect our communities, perpetrating stigmatization, stereotypes, and extreme xenophobia that we have faced since the beginning of the pandemic and beyond.
The hotline connects people to legal services, counseling and mental health resources, financial assistance, and community-based organizations. It will only refer people to law enforcement upon request, and callers are not asked for immigration status. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Washington state lawmakers are making a move to get about 1 million people currently eligible to vote registered to do so. Eric Tegedoff has more on that.
A bill in Olympia would further expand Washington state's automatic voter registration process. Democratic Senator Javier Valdez of Seattle introduced Senate Bill 5077 to allow the governor to widen automatic voter registration to more government agencies. Proponents say nearly 1 million eligible voters in Washington are not registered. Abigail Young of the Washington Voting Justice Coalition testified on Tuesday in support of the measure. She says the unregistered are typically new citizens, low income, or people with convictions who are less likely to get enhanced driver's licenses, where they would be automatically registered.
By automatically registering people to vote when they become citizens, apply for health care, or return home from prison, we take the burden of registration off of potential voters.
Leong says the bill would also save the state time and money. One opponent of the bill testified that the legislation would make the state's elections less secure. SB 5077 is scheduled for an executive session in the Senate Committee on State Government, Tribal Affairs, and Elections tomorrow. Jacob Schmidt is founder and director of Just Us Solutions and is formerly incarcerated. He also testified in support of the bill, saying people who are released from incarceration often struggle with things like technology.
Anything that we can do to strategically set people up coming out of incarceration to be involved with the civic process is something that we should do. And I say we should do this because every barrier that we remove that would otherwise frustrate them or make them feel disenfranchised is something that makes them feel like they're part of the community.
Haley Wu with Asian Counseling and Referral Service said that expanded automatic voter registration would help immigrant communities in Washington state as well.
Immigrant families face countless challenges like discrimination, long road to citizenship, and language barrier that prevent them from fully connecting with their new community. Sadly, many of our community, they don't receive enough voter outreach, so they need more support to register accurately and on time for election date.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
An Oregon town's pocket park is making a big impact and with very little money, Isabel Charlet explains.
Sometimes small changes can have a big impact. For the southern Oregon town of Chiloquin, a park that used to be a parking lot is creating space for the community to connect post-pandemic. The town's first shaded and accessible public seating area was built in part from funds from an AARP Oregon Challenge grant. Chiloquin City Council member Robert Cowie says the project has improved the livability of the town.
We see kids out there doing their homework or chit-chatting. I see people will walk along there and they'll stop and sit and rest for a bit before they continue their walk.
AARP Community Challenge grants fund quick action projects that improve public spaces, transportation, housing, digital connections, and more. Applications are open now through March 5th. All projects must be consistent with AARP's mission to serve the needs of people 50 and older, along with other eligibility criteria. Cowie says the Pocket Park in Chiloquin provides a beautiful space for their farmers market and has inspired more positive changes for the town.
It's a corner that everybody passes several times a day often. I think it's just brought a sense of renewal to the community.
Since 2017, AARP has invested more than $20 million towards 1,700 projects, including 35 in Oregon. This year's focus includes improving pedestrian safety and expanding high-speed internet, among other things. Applications can be found at aarp.org/community challenge. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, cloudy skies, down to 31 overnight. Tomorrow's weather, partly cloudy, up to 45. Today in history, on this date in 1957, the toy company Wham-O produced the first Frisbees. The quote of the day is from Boris Johnson. "I have as much chance of becoming prime minister as of being decapitated by a Frisbee or of finding Elvis." Portland Mayor Keith Wilson has officially put forth his plan to end unsheltered homelessness in Portland. He's calling for $28 million to be spent on emergency night shelters and emergency day shelters. That would equal 3,000 night shelter beds open before the end of the year. Wilson would also start enforcing the city's camping ban and stop giving 72 hours notice before a camp sweep, even though that's part of state law. Some officials have questioned the price tag. Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson said the figure seems low and accurate numbers are needed before they start on the path. Another Multnomah County official questioned why Wilson focuses so heavily on night shelters instead of 24/7 shelters that would keep people from having to move around so much. Wilson believes emergency night shelters will cost less money than 24-hour shelters. Wilson's plan also has a 90-day limit on how long folks can stay at a given overnight shelter. Portland City Councilors Angelita Murillo and Steve Novick were skeptical that was enough time, with Novick calling it, quote, unrealistic. Councilors said they wanted to see investment in housing, too, since a lack of housing is the root cause of homelessness. Some of the funds he wants to allocate are already set aside for shelter beds, but not all of it. Currently, the homeless population in Multnomah County is near 6,000, with only 3,000 shelter beds available in the county each night. And the mayor joined a new coalition of leaders from Portland, Multnomah County, and Gresham, who gathered for their first meeting together this week. They described their goals as they're targeting the issue of houselessness.
Jessica Vega Peterson, I use she, her pronouns. I'm the Multnomah County Chair. My hopes and dreams are to really use all of the will and brain power and expertise at this table to continue to do great work for our community and make huge strides.
Keith Wilson, Mayor of Portland.
Shannon Singleton, I'm the Commissioner for District 2 for Multnomah County. I think my hopes and dreams here are that we stay focused on the people who are most impacted and that are suffering, and that we find solutions to really end their homelessness and get them back into housing.
Hi, Peter Andrews, Melvin Mark Companies. I'm the business representative, non-voting member, thankfully. And hopes and dreams is similar to what the mayor said, to build a system that I think would be helpful for the long term to improve the outcomes, not just for those on the street, but also those that are living in our community and paying the taxes.
I'm Mindy Statlander. I'm the CEO of HealthShare of Oregon, which is one of two coordinated care organizations. We deliver Medicaid services to about 450,000 people in the Tri-County area. My hopes and dreams for this very much aligned with previous colleagues. And I think I've seen in the last year an incredible amount of work of the city and the county continuing to come together to make real change. And I hope to see that continue across both city and county.
I'm Eric Zimmerman and Portland City Councilor. Mostly for you, Mayor, that means the whole west side. Everybody else knows the districts, but the whole west side and a little bit of the east side. I chair the council's finance committee over at the city, and really hoping to be on this committee. The last year helped kind of shepherd in the sheltering approach in the package. I want to make sure that remains front of mind, but also that this is a committee and a program that is meeting the needs of the clients, but also something that works for the larger public.
that we continue to have our faith behind it.
Hi, everyone. Robin Johnson. I'm a policy advisor for the Homelessness Response System team. And I just want to point out, we have one of our community advisory council members here, Nikki Dolan.
My name is Ryan Dybert. I am very happily no longer the interim director of the Homelessness Response System. Well, glad to be with you, still part of the Homelessness Response System. This is work that many of us have been engaged in for decades. We've seen incredible progress over that time, and there's still just an amazing amount to do. So my hopes and dreams are that we're realistic about the breadth of the need before us and work hard to meet it.
Travis Stovall, still getting used to when I walk in a room and somebody says the mayor is coming, realizing they're not talking about me.
Welcome, Mayor Wilson.
You know, I couldn't have articulated better than the chair. I think you did a great job of I think synthesizing kind of thoughts and ideas about how we move forward and what the hopes and dreams are, you know, for this next year.
My name is Ivory Matthews, and I'm the CEO for Home Forward. My hopes and dreams for this committee is that as we shape policy and build stronger coalition among our systems partners, that we not only focus on the people who are unsheltered and getting them housed, but we also continue to remain some focus or keep some focus on people who are currently housed and still in vulnerable situations of being unhoused, so that we can keep them stably housed.
Jillian Shoney, the new director of the Homeless Response System. Very glad to be here. And I won't echo what everybody said. I agreed with everything. And I will just share that what I say to any public body, focused and functional. Those are the themes for this year. So with that, I think we're ready for the...
Eric Zimmerman, who is going to be the Portland representative on the Steering and Oversight Committee. And I wanted to just give you a brief understanding to the why. Where I have systems expertise, really what I'm looking for, Eric, is he's got deep county knowledge, which is something we need to do so we can hit the ground running. In addition, he's now our new member of our Housing and Homelessness Committee for the City Council. So he will be able to really take what we're doing here and work with the other 12 members. He's also the chair of the Finance Committee, because not only do we have an operational challenge on how do we stand up and care for our neighbors, but I really always want us to be focused on, we have a funding challenge so much as we do an operational challenge. And I think Eric's going to really help me understand that finance side, and then he'll be able to communicate with council. So please utilize him as your resource.
Okay.
Because as mayor, I certainly have a voice.
But very enthusiastic, Julian.
And I think it because I kind of view this as a prisoner swap, because I get Eric and Tarrant County gets Jillian, who wasn't steady recently. So I think as we're braiding our systems together, incredibly important that we understand how each organization and jurisdiction works well.
President Trump's pardons of January 6 participants spark mixed reactions. Federal DEI suspensions raise equity concerns. Diversity in medicine faces challenges post-affirmative action. And Citizens United continues to amplify big money in politics. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I think President Trump did the right thing by letting these guys out and pardoning them because they did not get a fair trial.
Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes visiting Capitol Hill a day after being released from prison. The right-wing militia leader who was convicted of attempting to start a violent coup is one of 14 people whose criminal sentences connected to January 6th were commuted by President Donald Trump. Meanwhile, a few of the 1,500 people pardoned for their part in the insurrection say they should not have been forgiven. One Boise, Idaho woman told reporters she didn't want to be pardoned because she was guilty. A New Hampshire man who stole a book from the Senate Parliament and was drinking wine openly told reporters his conviction forced him to deal with his alcoholism. A Trump executive order ending government diversity programs is making waves outside of Washington. Trump has put all federal DEI employees on leave with the anticipation he will attempt to dismantle the programs entirely. Catherine Turser with Common Cause Ohio says ending efforts to address America's inequalities will make governments and corporations work less well.
Diversity doesn't mean that we're not inviting people who are very qualified to the table. It means we're trying to have a diversity of opinions so that, in fact, we can create good public policy, that we can address the needs for all the people in the country.
She adds that it's painful to see this type of order the day after the celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday. Similarly, the National Academies of Science recently marked a decline in the number of Black men and women in medicine, following a 2023 Supreme Court decision reversing many higher education affirmative action programs. Officials say they expect ending government DEI programs could accelerate that trend. This week also marks 15 years since the Supreme Court's Citizens United versus FEC decision that reshaped campaign finance by categorizing donations as a form of free speech, which allows unlimited corporate and union spending in elections. Critics say it has amplified the influence of billionaire donors. Tiffany Muller, president of End Citizens United, noted billionaire donors visible at the presidential inauguration is a clear sign of what's changed in Washington.
Before Citizens United, we are actually able to have real meaningful conversations about ways to address the cost of prescription drug. Now, Big Pharma spends $300 million every election cycle.
Mueller adds that the idea of tech moguls like Elon Musk donating hundreds of millions to campaigns would have been unthinkable at the time of the ruling. Russell Vought, Trump's nominee to lead the Office of Management and Budget and co-author of Project 2025, told Senate lawmakers he supports work requirements for low-income Americans receiving publicly subsidized health insurance. I'm Farah Siddiqui with Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
A new grant helps Oregon tribes bring sea otters back to the coast. And new concerns about a pipeline running into British Columbia. With these stories and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez and National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. At least one First Nations leader in Canada says he's rethinking his concern about a proposed pipeline to the north coast of British Columbia. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, he says it might be necessary to support the pipeline project due to President Donald Trump's proposals.
Trump's threat of tariffs and a possible trade war with the U.S. have again highlighted a project thought to be dead. The Northern Gateway Pipeline would send Alberta bitumen to the coast of British Columbia for export overseas. The proposal died when the Trudeau government in 2016 announced a moratorium on crude oil tanker traffic to protect the coastal environment. A federal court had found that Indigenous people along the pipeline route had not been adequately consulted. Now Grand Chief Stuart Phillip of the Union of British Columbia Chiefs says that was a different time.
We are staring into the abyss of uncertainty right now with climate change, the climate crisis, and the American threat. So I would suggest that if we don't build that kind of infrastructure, Trump will, and there will not be any consideration for the environment or the rule of law.
The Premier of Alberta has already argued that Canada needs to start building pipelines in response to the threat of tariffs. She also says the threats from Trump make it crucial for projects such as Northern Gateway to be back on the agenda. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
It's official, the Arctic grayling is being reintroduced to Three Rivers in northern Michigan. Interlochen Public Radio environment reporter Ellie Katz has more.
Arctic grayling once swam in rivers and streams across the state, but logging and habitat loss wiped them out in Michigan. The last time the fish was seen in the Lower Peninsula was in the early 1900s. Now, more than 100 years later, scientists from multiple organizations are working to reintroduce the silvery blue trout species into the Boardman, Manistee, and Maple Rivers. Dan Mays is a biologist with the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians, one of the partners on the project.
This is one of those fish that were here when the tribe's ancestors were here and interacting with those fish. And it's important to reconnect that interaction with the people and the fish and the environment.
The Grand Traverse Band is one of three northern Michigan tribes that will receive the fish eggs from a state hatchery in May. The plan is to raise those fish in river water until they're eventually released later in the summer and fall. For National Native News, I'm Ellie Katz.
The Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians has announced that the tribe has been awarded a more than $1 million three-year grant from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. It will support tribal efforts to return sea otters to the Oregon and Northern California coasts. The federal grant is through the America the Beautiful Challenge. The tribe says the funding will enable them to build capacity and expertise in sea otter reintroduction and management, and to elevate the role of coastal Indian tribes in marine stewardship. The grant will support planning and technical capacity with regional and tribal partners. According to the tribe, sea otters have been absent from Oregon for more than a century due to the maritime fur trade. Among things, sea otters protect eelgrass habitat by keeping populations of small crabs under control. The North American Indigenous Athletics Hall of Fame has announced its 2025 class of inductees. It includes 42 athletes and 4 teams to receive honors for athletic achievements and contributions in sports. The new class will be recognized this summer in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 23rd, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Althea Billings, Isabel Charlet, Eric Tegadoff, and Suzanne Potter. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth, up next.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs.